Friday Afternoon Deploy is the Rodney Dangerfield of podcasts.
Unplugged. There was no Wi-Fi, so there wasn't even the temptation of, you know, I took my laptop, but all I did was I took my hoard of movies so we could watch movies in the evening. There wasn't even the temptation I could entertain of doing work, writing code, any of that.
It's pretty nice. And for the listeners, because I popped it on right in the middle of that. We're talking about vacation. Everyone wants out. When we went camping a couple weekends ago, we were deep enough down in that valley that I didn't have. It was perfect. It was like I had like 1X. I had like edge service, you know? So it's like I could get a call out if there was an emergency.
Right.
But I could not check Instagram. And that's like, that's a good amount of cell reception for camping, you know?
Yeah, that's the way mine was. I was tempted to try and podcast from down there, but I didn't, because I was in the same boat. Like I can make calls. I could post a video or post pictures. I couldn't probably get a video out, but I'd post pictures. Took like 30 minutes for them to upload. It's kind of nice. It was like living back in the day, because we took some pictures while we were hiking and then went to upload them to Google Drive, and then we're both sitting there going like, can you see them yet? Nope, I can't see them. Like, oh, I want to see yours though. Like,
it's old school. Like,
yeah.
How many kilobytes per second? Like 7. Oh God. Yeah. I remember when 7 kilobytes a second was like good dial up, you know? Mm-hmm. Did anybody have, I don't know if you guys had bad dial up or good dial up. We had bad dial up, like the 28.8. Because the old copper phone lines out to our house. I lived in the country. Yeah. And so it was like
the internet until like last year. So
say what?
I had really shitty internet until
you know the drill. You know the pain. Yeah. I remember, I'm pretty sure that ours peaked out. Like I knew that I was hitting max throttle at like 2.2 kilobytes a second. You know? And it was just like I remember downloading music and being like, oh my God, 1.8 kilobytes. It's going to take like 4 days to get this song. Yeah. I need this to go 2.2. I can get it in 3 days. You know?
You just had to let Kazaa or LimeWire or whatever you were ripping with.
And Morpheus. Bait. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember being excited in the morning when, because like,
to go see what you got overnight.
Because you had the chance that the connection would break,
or that it was nonsense, right? Like, how many times did you be like, "Oh my God, I didn't even know this movie was out yet," and then you download it for 3 days, and it's, you know, it's Clerks or something. It's like, I already have that.
Yeah,
you know.
Or worst case, it's like Clerks, but somebody recorded it with like a handheld camera off their TV.
Well, someone recorded it with the camera technology available. Yeah. Contemporary with 2.2 kilobyte per second downloads.
I got fooled a few times by like Tool spoofs out there.
There were a bunch of those.
Oh man, new Tool song?
They did that to us by not making an album for 12 years.
Yeah, man, it's hungry.
I only recently figured out how Cam Pirates got decent audio quality in the theaters. They sit in the handicap seats that have headphone jacks for the hearing impaired. Yeah. They just jack right in. Cause I'm just like, this doesn't make sense. Like this is pro grade audio, but this is potato grade video.
All have headphone jacks. Because my grandma is like really deaf.
Right.
And she used to have to get the headsets from the thing. But they didn't have, we didn't sit there. So like we had to get the headsets, and sometimes they're really shitty, and sometimes they didn't even have any. So it kind of sucked.
I can imagine. Yeah. I had a bunch of friends that worked in the movie theater at the local theater where I was growing up. There were a bunch of movie geeks, and so they loved there. And so we would just hang out at the theater all the time. I didn't work there, but most of my friends did. And so
I was the same. That's funny. I had my best friend worked concession, and my girlfriend at the time worked the box office or whatever. She'd hand out tickets. And so between those two, if I had nothing to do on a Saturday, dude, I watched the Apple Pie movie.
American Pie?
American Pie. I saw that twice in one day because of that. Because like I was rolling around and it's like,
yeah.
I want to go home. Like
I would, it was like, it was cool having friends that worked there, because if someone was in the box office, they absolutely would not let me buy a ticket. So that was cool. I would try to, you know, but like, nope, just go in. So I got to see a lot of free movies that way, but I also would hang out after hours, and that was fun too. And I won't sell anyone out, obviously, but people I may or may not know, showed me in whatever, you get what I'm trying to say. I'm not selling them out. You can make really, really good rips from a theater from inside the projection booth. Really good ones, like super high quality. When they upgraded to digital projectors, it was incredible the amount of like just plug and play like ports on the projectors themselves, because hell, we took an Xbox up there one time and played Halo in the theater, and that was awesome. Right after they got digital ones, I mean, they just straight up had an HDMI port on it, or like composite or something like that, and you could just plug it in and play Xbox. We put the Xbox up in the projector booth and then sat in the back row so that we could have like wireless controllers that would reach.
I was working out.
We had to sit in the very back row. It's like if you wiggled too much, you lose your controller. But yeah, playing Xbox. Funny. It was awesome. But I was amazed. It blew my mind. I was like, how do these movie theater projectors literally have like an output plug? It's like a, you know, rip this movie device right at the movie theater. But they do. We didn't use it for that. We just used it for the Xbox. No, you hear that? Not. Are you listening, FBI? We just used it for the Xbox.
That's correct. I found
not even allowed to do that anymore.
Shit. I hope it was legal then. We're way beyond the statute of limitations on that. Come at me. I don't care. I've done way worse shit.
But I bet I wouldn't be surprised if like movie theaters have like some kind of VOD agreement with movies now. Because I found it interesting. I found out back then, won't go into the details, but I found out that like the theater themselves, they get none of the ticket sales. That goes all back to the movie theater, and they just made their money off of concessions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why
they lost $1 billion.
Yeah, dude, it's like, you know, come on in. Buy some popcorn now.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's funny. They would give us free drinks as long as we brought our own cups. Because they were like, dude, the unit cost on the syrup is nothing, but the cups are expensive. Don't take my cups.
Yeah. They say that movie theater popcorn is more expensive per ounce than filet mignon.
That makes about pretty good sense.
Yeah.
Isn't there, one of them, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but one of them you get like free refills, I thought, or like maybe it's just a really big one.
Buy 5 gallons of popcorn.
Yeah, you have to buy the $12 bag.
It's like 2 gallons or something. Yeah. It's a crazy
You have to buy enough popcorn to hide a baby in. And then when you and your hidden baby eat it all, you go back and get a second bucket.
Fancy food, though.
I don't know that I've ever had food. Anything outside of like the popcorn, but I know like the theaters here, well, not counting like the very upscale fun stuff like dinner theater, like Alamo Drafthouse and stuff like that like have a menu. But like I've never experimented with, I'm pretty sure like the Malco's here have like hot dogs and pretzels.
I think so.
AMC's got a decent menu.
Do they?
Yeah, it's they have a bar.
Has that upgraded in the new wave? I don't go to theaters. Okay. You guys already know that I'm not a huge movie person because it always comes up that I hadn't seen some classic thing, but I'm definitely not a theater person like since then. Maybe I got burned out on it from my youth.
Tropic Thunder's the last thing he saw in the theater.
It really might have. No, I saw the second of the Hobbit trilogy in theaters.
Oh, okay.
And I've gone to see Star Wars, obviously, although I missed the most recent one. I did not go for that one. I still haven't seen it, you guys. I'm just like afraid. It's on Disney Plus. It's right there. I can go watch it right now. And I'm just like, I don't know if I can do it.
Why not?
Because
what are you scared of? You're already paying for it.
It's true. We're getting other value out of that. Actually, no, I'm not paying. Verizon. If you're a Verizon customer, you get free Disney Plus for a year. That was their COVID gift to me. Yeah, I know. They're like, enjoy your free Disney Plus on my $300 fucking phone bill.
I got Verizon too. I know you're paying.
Yeah, it's true.
Especially if you got the unlimited data plan.
I do.
Yeah, you got to these days.
Yeah. Well, unlimited data is the only way to get limited data. I mean, like, you know, it's not unlimited. We just call it that because it's the big one.
Yeah.
But don't use more than 10 gigs. Seriously. That's. Actually, I've never been hit with an overage from Verizon. But. I don't know. Star Wars is. Maybe I'm afraid for it to end. Just period. You know?
Well, they're going to make more.
Yeah, I know.
They've got. I was going down that rabbit hole because I was kind of like. I was thinking about. And this is a good one. I feel like I'm. I have to apologize for being out of sync with the episode that Blake was on. I feel like I could have done a real deep dive with him in the Marvel comic universe that Disney's doing. Because I'm all caught up now on the Avenger movies and stuff. And so it just dawned on me that like Disney owns Fox now. So like they can make X-Men movies and stuff now too.
Yeah, they're going to crash like the rest of it instead of decent like they used to be.
Wait. When you say decent like they used to be,
how far back? Like,
I threw up in my mouth a little bit first. They're not decent. So bad. I hate the Fox X-Men movies and what they did to my beloved X-Men. So it's going to be hard to do worse than trash.
What's wrong with Wolverine?
Everything. And especially
the like Disney shit. It's a pile of shit nowadays. Like they just make fucking pile shit.
I just love hearing Willow this fired up
in the flames. Hold on. So what they did to Deadpool at first is amazing, though, that Ryan Reynolds turned that around. I feel like he had personal interest in making a proper Deadpool.
He really seemed to enjoy that role, right? Like,
and he played it the first time around, and me and a friend of mine went to go see it in the theater. We were so excited, but then it's they made him where he didn't have a mouth, which first off is like, what? The mouthiest comic book character I can think of from my era, and you take away his mouth, you did that on purpose. Like, no, it's like, but why? Why did you do that? Why did you take my money and then slap me in the face, like, here to see this? And so, like, they've tongue-in-cheek referenced it in the new movies and stuff. So they've done a pretty good job with them. I liked the CGI and stuff in Logan, but there's always little stuff. And to be clear, guys, like, for the folks listening, I have somewhere all the comic book cards that Flair put out for like 1994. There's like a span from like 91 to 94, 95. Me and like three or four of my friends were so into it that like I'm one of the hard fans that like I know so much of the lore. Like if you veer off just a little bit, we'd be like, no, that's not, that wasn't his mom. His homeboy to tables. Who's this person? You know, like,
I didn't grow up on comic books in that way. I grew up around it and enjoyed it some, but I wasn't like a hardcore fan. So that aspect of like the movie adaptations has been lost on me because I don't know whether or not it's true to canon, but gotcha. I can still say that I thought that the only one of the X-Men movie that I saw, the first one, was objectively bad. Just not even as a fan, you know, just as a moviegoer. Yeah. It just wasn't a good movie. And I have not kept up with all the comic book shit. The last time I saw Spider-Man, it was Tobey Maguire. so I don't know how many Spider-Mans ago that is. The last time I saw Batman, it was American Psycho.
No, that's
probably not that many Batmans ago. I haven't seen Affleck as Batman, and I'm happy with that.
I will say this about the DC universe. Like, The Dark Knight and all that, I think, is the one time like they got it right. Aside from like whatever,
I liked The Dark Knight. I mean, some people didn't, but I really liked it.
I liked it.
I don't like Tim Burton Batman. We've talked about this before.
I like it. Yeah. I like both of them.
They're very different things.
Way better than any of the Marvel superheroes by far.
Agreed.
Tyrell has said in silence. There's a whole thing, and then he's just like, at that moment, he was just like, "I'll give you that one."
the only superhero I like at all.
That's fun. That's funny. It's funny to like being a Marvel fan. Like, I was reading a Wolverine comic the other night, and there was a tongue-in-cheek reference to Batman in there, where there was somebody wearing a cape because they wanted to stay like hidden. It's like, oh, you better not have a utility belt under there.
Sly Batman reference.
Yeah.
But yeah. Still not as good as Batman.
Batman's okay, but Punisher is way cooler.
See, my brother is a huge Punisher fan. His first car was the Punisher. Very aptly named, by the way.
What was it?
It was a Buick Regal. Like an 86, I think. Dude, that thing was slick. If you've never seen a Buick Regal, in that like particular era, you just could tell that when that car came out, it was hot shit. It had like a digital dash and the speedometer on it like ticked up with digital line. It looked like Ridge Racer, you know, on the NES. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, I remember
that. I'm pretty sure that car predated Ridge Racer on the NES. And it it was sweet. And it had like a factory installed CD changer in the trunk. It was cool. But it was my brother was not driving that as a new car. We're a little bit younger than that. So by the time it got to him, it was the Punisher.
Yeah. That's funny. I like that because I had a Mercury Topaz, same era. I think it was a 1986 Mercury Topaz, same kind of deal. It was the there was the Ford there was another one. This was like a fancy version of that, so it just had really nice upholstery and stuff like that. At one time,
yes.
By the time I got it, there were cracks in the dash and stuff and all that, but we called it the Millennium Topaz. This is what we called it, though.
I had a buddy that had a green Topaz as well. Those things were kind of fast too, as I recall.
It was all right. It had, I remember,
it was not a big car, and it had a V6 in it, I think.
Mine was a four cylinder, but it was a larger four cylinder because I remember I've never been much of a gearhead, and I remember showing it.
Same. So someone listening to this episode is, and it's just like, what the fuck did he just say? Did he just say a Topaz was fast?
I ain't seen the Firebird.
What I meant was, when I was 16, I rode around with my friend, and we almost died a lot. That's what I meant. I probably didn't need the car to be that fast in order for him to drive it too fast for where we were driving.
Yeah, especially for all the other things that in that car were not, tailored to driving that fast.
No. I'm digging over here. I was trying to look up and see if I could find a picture that.
I was going to say that generation concludes of our programmers talk motors.
Yeah, motors and motors and Marvel. That's our motors and Marvel segment.
and the flames on the comic book wars there.
I can't think of the last Disney movie that I saw that was worth a shit. Because you got to go back far.
Willow is on too bad. It.
Was I enjoy it? A lot of them.
I haven't seen...
Moana's awesome.
If we talk about kids' movies, I haven't seen... Henry's not old enough that we like really sit down and do movies. So I haven't seen like a Pixar movie since like WALL-E or something like that.
Which you would like Onward. You should watch Onward. You would like that.
I would like it?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
The amount of effort they put in now is like 5%.
Wait. When you say it's been a while, what was a good one? Give me a baseline.
Yeah, what's your favorite?
5% of Toy Story or like 5% of Bambi? Where are we at here?
Well, both of those are relatively on the same level.
Okay. Toy Story and Bambi. I'm fine with that. Someone might have issue with that, but I'm perfectly fine with it.
5% of that level.
Okay.
So they are Bambi and Toy Story are like 40 years apart.
I know. It's the same level, the same creativity, maybe not the same, you know, like technologically capabilities.
Well, and also just like the fact that they were. Yeah, they Bambi really was. Yeah. Like the way it was animated.
That was in the 40s, I think that came out. Because I remember it came out way earlier than what I thought. Because, like, that's one of the first movies I just remember.
Okay, I can think of one that came out recently that was good. One exception.
No, okay. I'm skeptical.
Coco was all right.
Coco was awesome.
It's not on the one of those, but it's not bad. It's decent.
What Toy Stories are okay? Mm. You make it sound like you're anti-Toy
Story. I'm pretty sure there's only one. I haven't seen 4 yet, so.
I like 2 and 1, and then 3, I haven't seen 4 because it looks like shit.
I've heard good things about 4. 4 looks like, you know, what you would kind of expect in as much as it's been a little while and it's a fans movie, right?
It makes
3. It's not as good as 3.
Hmm. Did you like 3?
Yeah. I like 3 all right. It's not as good as 2 and 1, but it's still okay.
Which one's 3?
I didn't like 3.
3's my least favorite.
What's the plot point of 3? Is that the one where people get captured by Sid?
The daycare.
Oh, the daycare. 2 is at Sid's house, or at least some version of it.
Fresh. Okay. At least it's fresh.
One's at Sid's house. 2 is crazy collector man.
Oh, yeah. I was confusing him with Sid for some reason. Yeah, okay. Never mind.
Sid's the villain in the first one, and then there's Crazy Collector Man, and then there's disgruntled, abandoned teddy bear from the third one at the daycare. He's the bad guy.
So I have not seen the third or the fourth now, I'm realizing. See, you guys? I told you, it comes up all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't see him. Yeah. But like I brought those two up, Bambi and Toy Story, just because they both became like instant classics. Like the moment they came out, everybody knew like, okay, that's a movie we're gonna be watching for 40 years, right?
I was trying to think, like, Snow White, I think, is one that came out a long time ago. I was trying to think of, there's one that just blew my mind, like, was like,
how Snow White was rotoscoped.
Like, that was basically the old
painted. One. It was painted on the film. It was rotoscoped. Rotoscoping is next level.
I'm looking for the silent version of it. 1937.
1937. That's the one that blew my mind. Because Bambi, I want to say, is from the 40s, and I think maybe Sleeping Beauty is too. I didn't realize how old Snow White was, because we were watching it the other day, and Emberly, like, totally checked out. She's like, I don't know what you old people are watching.
That is like, pretty crazy. Like, most of the world was not embroiled in World War II yet. And Snow White is coming out.
Right?
Yeah. Like Pearl Harbor hadn't happened, but they were making Snow White.
Yep.
Wait, 30 what?
37.
37.
Okay, never mind. I was about to say, we're almost 100 years from
That's
from Snow White.
Oh man, mark your calendars, yeah. Folks. Hold on, let me put that on there. Yeah. 2037, got my Snow White centennial party. We're gonna have.
Heck yeah!
They're gonna release another version.
It's gonna be a gritty reboot of Snow White that Disney puts out.
I've already done that. It's called The Huntsman.
Yeah. Fair. Yeah.
And it was garbage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they decided they needed another one, which was also garbage.
Well, you guys, I think that now 25 minutes into this episode, it's probably time to give our audience some software. You guys want that? What? Some softwares? Yeah. You guys want to talk about some softwares?
Let's love and hate on the software now.
And I can be good now.
I'm glad, Willow. I'm glad that we can be an outlet. She's yeah. Purged. She's I'm purged. Glad you were able to pop off on that. And
that's what I do, man.
Alan brings that out of people. He's like,
I just want to get it out.
He's
and
like a rage therapist. You know, he's like. This podcast is like one of those. Yeah, it's like one of those scream rooms that you go into and just shout like Steve Jobs used to do.
What Disney did to you.
How do you feel about JavaScript, Willow? as strongly as Disney movies?
No, not actually nearly as strong.
So that's the real like articulation of your disdain for Disney movies is that JavaScript is better. And that really speaks volumes.
That's for our metric. That's where we're at on the scale.
We can't talk about Jamstack today because I promised Blake we would do that with him, and he's not here. In case anyone has noticed,
I'm gonna bring something up from stand up this morning. Joseph had a great idea.
All right, let's hear it.
Tyrell and I kind of start talking technology a little bit on this as we hand off this project to the client, and so we could tell that Joseph. His eyes had glazed over, and so we were like, okay, well, let's go back to. And he was like, no, I was just thinking, like, you guys were talking about all these JavaScript frameworks, like we should have a Candyland that is like, instead of landing on Peppermint Mountain, you land on like Angular 1.
Oh my god.
It's like, if we did that intelligently and then got that on Kickstarter, dude, yeah,
that sounds land. Good JS land. It's like Candyland.
And you go, you've got like, there's so many frameworks.
Yeah. So many. You do this all day, man. There's like, you can have an infinite game with just NPM squares. There's like, how many packages are on NPM right now?
Well, you don't need NPM. I mean, you can just go with frameworks.
I know. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's the crazy thing.
If you go by packages, you could drag Python and Ruby as well for Jim.
That's true. That's true. Packages.
But Ruby just frameworks.
Frameworks. I've invented since we started this podcast.
No doubt. And if not, the TypeScript variation of it was spawned. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that tends to follow later or what.
That's the bad thing that Ruby got from JavaScript is the stupid packages, like the gem files. Those things are a mess sometimes.
Yep. They sure can be.
Not even close to like a requirements.txt file. It's not even close to the same thing.
Yeah. Although I will say, you know, because there's no like resolution, if you've ever gotten yourself sideways with a requirements.txt file and you've got like one dependency that's out of sync version wise with other ones and you end up in the like upgrade this. Nope. That's not compatible with that.
I know. Downgrade that again.
Yeah. Like, and having to flip those switches a bunch to find it. You know, lock files are nice for that reason.
Photo and request. I've had specifically, I've done that.
It's photo too. And it's the damn AWS Elastic Beanstalk CLI is the one that always, when we were deploying stuff, before we had seen the Kubernetes light, we were dabbling. Yeah. We were experimenting a little bit with Elastic Beanstalk.
Yeah.
And if you're doing that with a Python app, and I think it was also, it was like Docker Compose was part of it. So if it was like, it was Docker Compose, Bodo, and a couple of other things that in those projects, if you were using Elastic Beanstalk for Docker, it was a nightmare. I think Willow, the project that you're working on, somewhere in there, Alan and I scratched our heads for like 2 days. Over just trying to get the versions pinned between those,
the magic combination
of versions that made all three of those things happy. And it used to happen every damn time Docker Compose released an update, it would blow up again. Yeah. Hasn't happened in a while, though.
Do you guys see that Docker is bolting straight into ECR now?
Bolted no. straight into ECR?
You can right. Docker Compose, build, and deploy to ECR directly.
Oh, sweet.
I like that.
That's great.
I like that, yeah.
That means I don't have to install the DM. That simplifies CI quite a bit for us on AWS, yeah. for sure.
Yeah.
Sib, you're still gonna have keys,
right?
So do you not have to do like the login step? That would work, yeah, because you just that makes sense because you AWS login craps out a Docker login script, yeah. Okay,
it just pipes it
and pipes it to a shell. Okay, that makes sense. Yep. That's pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Also, big news: Rancher being acquired by. Oh, how do you pronounce it? Is it Suzy? I always say Suzy.
My instructor at NTI called it Suzy.
Suzy or Susie or whatever.
Yeah, he said some people call it Seuss, but he just calls it
the lizard. I think it's a lizard. It used to be a lizard.
It is. It's yeah.
The Linux lizard.
I think it's the one with the moves of the eyes around the
chameleon.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. I've always been a fan. So that's cool. Good for Rancher. Good for them dudes. And good for us as users, I think, right?
Yeah.
That's going to get first class. And
Rancher's been around for a while. So,
I'm pretty sure someone over there at is going to go like, okay, you're part of the Suzy family now. When you talk about your documentation, we have a certain way we like to hold ourselves here. And we just can't have you going out looking like that. I hope. Fingers crossed.
Because like I said, in the office, I've got a book this thick on OpenSUSE that, like, you know, we had to go deep into it. And, you know, one of the things I'd liked about it, it doesn't have, at least at that time, it didn't have training wheels like Ubuntu. So there was no sudo or sudo. Sudo was like a whole thing for me to have to learn and figure out, like a whole paradigm. Like, what? Why? Why can't I? So I just go sudo. What if I go sudo su? All right. Well, don't do that. Try not to do it.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm just the super user. And so we had this exercise of creating an alias for sudo that would execute a command as if you were root. It would, like, make you root for a second, run that command, and then drop you back into your
so that you could, like, reproduce that sort of behavior.
Yeah, and I guess it's to kind of know that that's a thing. Yeah.
Very security heavy distro as well, right?
Yeah,
as I recall.
It's enterprise focused. It's kind of like Red Hat.
Yeah.
That's right. So it's not CentOS is. Red Hat's built on top of CentOS.
Correct.
So.
Yeah.
Sort of. But Suzy's.
Hopefully, no enterprise-y.
Enterprise version.
Did you want to talk about the thing you mentioned at the start?
Maybe. I can't commit to it because I don't remember what it was.
about offboarding.
Oh, yeah. Offboarding a client, for sure. I think that I know that Tyrell and Alan.
I figured we were going to get to this at one point. I wanted to bring it up.
There's a lot going on there. And I figured that was worthy of discussion because there's a lot to that I guess we don't think about day to day as like developers going out and building stuff. We're not really thinking about that handoff period. And especially if you don't work in consulting like we do, like if you work at a product company, you might hand it over to an ops team or something. But like, it's kind of still there, but we're wrapping up a project. It's time to hand it over to, our client who has development staff in house now. There's a lot to unpack there, I guess, as far as like how you do that well, how you package it up. I know Tyrell's been drawing a lot of infrastructure diagrams the last couple of days. I've seen quite a few. Yeah.
So much fun. I'm the PDF.
PDFs for Lucidchart everyone.
Has a great script that you can run through AWS CLI, and it'll go in into a region and export all your stuff and turn it into stuff for your graphs.
Lucidchart does that? Mm-hmm. Handy. I used to always use that. Handy. What was that one that we used to use, Alan? That did the cool 3D Cloudcraft. Had these really cool, like, isometric angled. They looked very good, but you had to build them by hand. Yeah. Theirs was like, they didn't have any interoperability. It also tried to be a price calculator, which was kind of strange. Like, you would draw it out and it would tell you the price of the infrastructure that you did. So those worked really well in proposals when people were like, yes, what's it going to cost us to run this app? And be like, well, check out this super sweet graph that shows you your app from an airplane.
This server and this server and this server, and it'll cost you about X amount.
Mm-hmm. You want to make that? You want three of that server? Cool. Let me fly the airplane over there. It was like it made graphs that looked like the Unix system from Jurassic Park. That's what it was. Little buttons for all the servers on a grid.
It's something to kind of keep in the back of your mind. Like, kind of like you said, we're a consultancy, and so I was telling that team, like, I that's where I remember that I humbly like to think of ourselves like the team from Predator. You know, we airdrop into the jungle. Yep. We don't live in the jungle.
No.
We just airdrop into the jungle. We kill some drug lords, and then a predator shows up, and we're like, holy crap, what's this? They're like, we don't know. And then we
I thought you were the experts. Yeah.
And we kill the predator, and then we airlift out of the jungle, hopefully at the end. With more of our team intact than we did in Predator.
And we say, enjoy your jungle.
Yep, exactly. It's free of drug lords, and it's all yours now.
Yep. But we tied it up, and that's good too, right? You tidy up. So Tyrell's been doing a bunch of, very documentation heavy, right? The handoff.
We've got some, how Joseph had coined it, because I was like, ooh, that's very fancy sounding, workshops, that's what it is. Like, workshops, we're going to walk them, we walk them through the code base, like front end, back end, and any of that kind of stuff, and maybe highlight like some of the more complex components, and then entertain a Q&A for the new development team.
That's a really fun thing. I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. And I know like an outsider would look at it and go like, what? That's fun. Like if Paige came up to the office and watched us put an app up on the big screen in the conference room and just walk through the code for 8 hours, I think she would just be like, oh Lord, there's something wrong with these people. They are fundamentally broken. But like, we're looking at it going like, okay, this is a fun story. Let me tell you about this function. This is cool. All right. Well, it's some context. It was winter, and that you can do that. You can do that with other developers. You can look through and tell code stories. There's battle stories in there, and that's fun. I think.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
Depending on the context, it depends on how they, if they are a story appreciating folk.
That's true. Mm, it depends on your audience.
Sure.
And it also depends on, I guess, the content of the story. If the story is like, oh man, that was bad, but now it's good. That's a fun, everyone's like, oh, well, I like this story, you know? And if it's just like, we never figured that out. That's just still bad. That might be like,
that predator's still out there.
Well, I mean, like we got all the ones we saw, but like we saw some footprints, that we didn't know what they were. Could still be something out there.
Yeah.
So workshops, handing stuff over, documentation, diagramming. Delivery of actual like software, not like business bro delivery, like doing the work. I mean, like actually handing it off to someone. It's a lot easier now than it used to be,
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, you already have the source code, it's on GitHub and it builds itself and deploying it. You just take the crystallized memory and put it, you just take this DVD of your app and put it in the app player, Kubernetes, and it goes, you know.
Yep. Don't put it in that slot or it'll go to that one.
Nope. That DVD player is hooked up to the other TV. That's why it's next to it, you know. But there's not really a whole lot to mess up on all of that. And that's pretty cool because, you know, I've handed over a lot of software over the years, either in product shops or in consulting shops. And it used to be quite a bit different, just as much as like, we didn't have as much tooling, you know, like DevOps wasn't a thing. So
here's your zip file.
Yeah. And it was sort of implicit in it. That was like, cool. And now where are my X hours of training to show me how to do this thing? Because like we hadn't automated deployments, like the whole infrastructure as code wasn't a thing not that long ago, you know, and it's still not a thing at a lot of places. I'm sure there are people listening to the show that are like, wish we had fucking CI. Yeah. Dude, I've been there.
Wish I didn't have to FTP into a server to deploy my app.
Mm-hmm. Wish I didn't have to, every time I'm writing code, like paste a chunk of SQL into a text file, and that's my migrations. We did that at the newspaper. Oh my God. We had this one. It was just like, it was a SQL file, actually. If you tried to run it, I don't even know what happened. But every time we like changed the model, this is before South in Django, which became Django migrations. We would literally write the SQL to alter the column, and we would just paste it in that file. You know, and when we went to deploy, if something broke on like the staging environment, we'd be like, oh, well, someone pull up the SQL file and try running the last, I don't know, three or four of those. You just scroll to the bottom and be like, I don't think I ran these three, you know, like, oop, that blew up. Says that column's already exists. All right. Never mind. We've been here before. I'm finding breadcrumbs, you know. Yep. That was migrations. Migrations was migrations.txt.
Yeah, it's better than That's better than doing the old PHP MyAdmin.
Just
MySQL database.
Point management. Click change my database at deployment time.
Yeah, that's a different kind of pain. I was wondering about like what's the enterprise Java world look like that? Do they have Flyway database migrations with Flyway. That's what Spring's using.
Oh.
Install that with your Maven. Let's have a check on dear old granddad. See what. How you do that in Java.
Just make sure he's still got power. Make sure that he's still got food in the fridge.
For him, you know? He's got migrations. Like,
no, make sure he didn't have the COVID.
Yeah, Grandpa, we hadn't heard from you in a while. Are you, you do have database migrations, right? Because, you know. We can't let you live by yourself if you don't, you know.
Studying up Java is horrible. I hate Java. I'm never going to like it.
It's,
I like
you know, JavaScript a million times. I can get on board with that. But you know what I like Java a lot more than? C. And, well, C++.
Yeah.
Okay. C is a little more friendly. Okay.
C.
There's no replacing C. Okay.
No.
But C++. No, thank you. I'll take Java over C++ any day, and I'll be able to run it anywhere, and that's nice.
Yep. Yeah. Another convenience of it. Yep.
If that anywhere includes like someone's desktop after they install a JRE, it's the most annoying thing ever. I remember. Do you guys remember when software wasn't in your web browser and you downloaded an app and then you had to get the thing that was like, you need the latest version of Java? Or worse. The little sun coffee logo. Or even worse, it was like, you have too new of a version of Java. You need to run two concurrent JREs. Now go to the Oracle site and prepare yourself for the trials.
Are you worthy of the JavaScript?
You go to the Oracle website looking for the JRE, and it's like climbing the thousand steps. You know, you know, you're not the first traveler to come this way. And many have come back weary and empty-handed. Most don't come back at all. They must really like it up there at the top of that mountain. We don't ever hear from them again.
It's scary to think about, like, that's how chat rooms exclusively used to work like before WebSockets were a thing.
Yeah, man. You had the what were they called? Applets? Java applets?
Yep.
Whatever the hell it was. It was like a jar that ran in your browser.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Yeah.
Just run this Java, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yep. So I didn't mean to. I don't disagree with Willow because I don't want to write Java. I never get
up.
Yeah,
I'm not saying let's switch all of our tooling over.
Let's switch over to Spring right now. Yeah, no. Yeah, I agree. But
yeah,
it could be worse.
Yeah.
I think so I would rather write Turbo Pascal than Java. Am I ever write Turbo Pascal?
Mm-mm.
I don't know that Turbo Pascal was any different than regular Pascal. That might have Turbo might have just been a interpreter or compiler or whatever.
Mm.
I think I might have just said something stupid. I think I just said like, did anyone ever write Borland C? Although did you ever mess with the different? There's like Microsoft had a compiler, Borland had a compiler. They might have had a different instruction set for C. I'm not totally sure.
Could have. I'm not sure. Yeah. Yeah, I like to keep I keep an eye on Java because you never know when there might be a hard problem that you need it to run a little bit faster, and I don't have the time. As much as it's fun to tinker with Rust and stuff, it's just I know enough Java that I can get stuff done if I have to.
Yeah.
It, you know, that's why it's your old granddad. I know it's there. I know it's an older way of doing it, but I know it still does it really good. It's still run on what are they both like 100 million machines or something.
You can always get something done with Python or even Ruby.
Yep.
And that's where I always would always prototype whatever I was trying to do probably in Python.
The tricky thing about it is distribution, right? That's what the JVM solved before we had other options for it. Before we could do Docker,
You
know, writing and still today without Docker, if you needed to write something, even if you prefer to write in Python, but you need to like, you work in an IT department and you need to roll that out to every computer in the company. And it's like, okay, we need you to install Python. No, not Python 2. It's a whole thing. Python. Yeah. All right. Are you familiar with virtual environments? Like, you're not going to be able to get the accounting department to set it up. So you have to find some way to, and you can package stuff. There are like packagers that'll turn that into an EXE for Windows, but it's complicated. That's the problem. That's the first problem that Java really solved was this common virtual machine that was, as long as they got the virtual machine to run on that machine, your code would run the same. Kind of in a weird way, like what Docker does. If it works here, it's going to work there, you know? Mm-hmm. At least the outcome, it was a totally different means to it, but the outcome was the same.
Yeah, it actually is.
I mean,
quite a bit.
Docker for Mac is running on the Docker VM, right? You can almost think of the Docker VM as like the JVM, right?
It's just now we can crystallize the memory of that operating system and load it in there. And I'm curious
they're fundamentally about, like, very different designs between containers and stuff. But as far as like what purpose that VM serves, it's kind of the same thing. It's a shim between your OS and this other thing that is interoperable as long as it is shimmed correctly.
Right. Run your Java C command to compile it to the Java bytecode, and then the JVM can execute that bytecode. And so thus it, you know, it ate up and still does eats up a lot of memory because it has to, you know, it's not able to really memory optimize. It's got to always have a certain amount of memory open just in case. And, you know, and Python kind of suffers from that same issue. Any interpreted language, any higher level interpreted language definitely does.
There's a trade-off.
I'm going to have to get out of here.
Okay.
We'll see you, Willow.
All right. Thanks, see you, Willow.
Have a good weekend. Update on my ignorance. Borland was the successor to Turbo. So Borland was both a IDE and compiler, and it was the successor to Turbo. So Turbo Pascal is not a thing. That was the interpreter I was using. So I wrote Pascal.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah, I've never wrote the Pascal.
I just remember liking it. I don't remember anything about the syntax of it. But
it's been a while since I've seen the family tree of languages. I remember Chad putting it on the whiteboard and going over it, which I was fascinated with.
It's got some aspects of, so like I wrote it after Basic. Sorry, I just had a total brain meltdown. Yeah, Basic first, right?
That makes sense.
It was only the second programming language after Basic, and Basic was, you know, very aptly named. It was the first language that could like really do stuff. And if you look at some Pascal, you may be surprised at how Ruby-like it looks.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure it's upstream from Ruby, and I think they specifically...
It uses blocks the way Ruby does. Tab indentation and sort of begin and end statements to like, you know, if it were C style, it uses words where you would have normally, you know, mustachios. So yeah, I'm looking at just a picture from the
Wikipedia page. Picture. I really like. I'll drop it in our channel, so maybe we can share it in the show notes. I don't think it's proprietary, but this PNG is this long, drawn out like Gantt chart of languages, and then lines connecting them.
Yes,
I love this kind.
Sounds like some data porn.
Yeah,
for developers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
put that in the Slack channel.
Know your history. I'll put the link there.
We'll put that in the show notes.
We won't. That's on Stanford.
I'm so bad about writing the show notes, you guys. It's just, you know.
Just drop this in there and go. Here you go.
Yeah, I'll drop that. The entirety of the show notes. Oh, this is great. Yeah.
It's good resolution, too. It's like 4K resolution.
You know, that's one of my favorite things, actually. I don't know if anyone else gets that satisfaction. It's when you open, like, a PDF or an image like that, and it's got a lot of data in it, and I zoom in, and I see that I'm working in something really high quality. That's just a nice... Some people get that feeling from sitting down in a nice luxury car. I get that feeling... from a PNG that's over 4,000 pixels wide. That's where I get
it. I know, right? That's what I use DuckDuckGo, and I do an image search in there, and that's always kind of like I have a brain filter on like, oh, if that's like below 1,000 pixels, I probably don't want to look at it. Like, my eyes are getting older. And
I love that the actual granddad, great granddad, the ancestor at the top of the family tree is Fortran. If you didn't already, spoiler alert. What's cool though is that it doesn't seek to imply that literally everything. That's the oldest one, and a lot of stuff is in that tree. But if you scroll down to the bottom, there are three other branches of the tree that start independent, and Basic was one of them, and I find that really interesting.
Yeah, I remember I had a test on
Basic's on Basic's on a line all by itself. It never inspired anything else.
No, it never had to. That's why it was made like originally at Dartmouth University. I forget the guy's name that invented it, but. That's why they made it. They made it so that people that don't, you know, haven't studied computer science for many years could be able to program stuff. And I'd say they did that well. I think they did that really well.
At that time, they didn't. I don't think anyone realized at that time how much accessibility was going to become important. Now, as engineers, especially in web development, this is why, you know, there's why JavaScript Candyland is a possibility for us is because everyone spends the vast majority of their time trying to make it nicer to write, more enjoyable to write. And I don't want to think about that. I would like some conveniences. There's some funny labels in this, by the way. Visual Basic is
the Rodney Dangerfield of programming languages.
Yeah.
The king of one-liners.
Building sites.
Yep. Cast in a million films, not any great ones, but plenty of enjoyable ones.
Basic, the Rodney Dangerfield. Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
Yep.
Popular revealing websites with Microsoft Visual Studio tools. Yep.
Did you know that Java was initially called Oak, according to this?
I knew that. I probably did know that, but I'd forgotten.
Very good. Python.
I'm trying to find Python's lineage. Here I am.
Python, it includes features missing from Perl. That's your takeaway from that.
Really?
Yeah.
Also, I love that Rubyists would hate that all that it says about Ruby is an object-oriented language.
You gotta think, in 1993, that's pretty much all it was, you know.
I'm gonna say some hateful shit, language. Okay? But
it ends. It ends.
It just, that's it.
Just ends in like 94. It's like,
it does. They don't make this go any further.
Yeah.
Because it stops at 2001. So,
well, it picks back because Ruby actually didn't, you know, here was my hateful thing was like, what's Ruby without Rails? Okay. Who was using Ruby for anything? Seriously, I'm not trying to be a jerk, but if you're out there, I want to hear your story. I want you to tell me like, no, man, I've been using Ruby like every day for 25 years for web development. I program phone systems with it. Tell me.
The only thing I can think of that I use every day that's written in Ruby, Brew.
That's true.
Yeah. Hobbs, I think, did some pre-Rails Ruby.
Okay. For web dev, even?
Or just...
I think he did some scripting in it.
Interesting.
That's cool.
So I
could be wrong.
Since this chart ends at 2001...
Mm-hmm. It's everything else.
I've read the legend now. The arrow at the end implies lineage continues. So if there's an arrow at the end, it's just like, it's still going. We just don't have anything to say about it.
And that's kind of where I was interpreting the Ruby. Like, I mean, between 1993 and 2001, there really isn't probably a whole lot to say about Ruby. There's probably some Ruby enthusiasts out there that hate me right now, and that's okay.
This is fantastic.
Python didn't do much, just went to Python 1.6. Which I think I installed.
I don't know that I've ever written any Python 1.
I played with it. I can't remember if it goes back that far. I know I definitely played with Python 1 a little bit just to see it. And one of the interesting things was like even the icon on it was different. They didn't have the yellow and
the blue snake. Yep.
It was a snake, but it was like a green snake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen that around. Man, what was a killer feature for Python 2? Like what did they not have in Python 1?
Had to be something.
I gotta know. I gotta go find here we go. Here we go. What's new in Python 2.0? Still on python.org, of course.
Yeah.
Let's see here. First of all, new development process. Python 2 was like, we support Unicode at all. That's the very first thing in this list is like, what's new in Python? Unicode. You're all going to love it.
That's funny.
Never mind the fact that 15 years from now, you will be cursing this language up and down as we try and undo what we've done with Unicode. List comprehensions didn't exist in Python 1.
Okay.
I'm losing my interest in writing in this language real quick.
Real quick.
Yeah. Like, no Unicode, no list comprehensions. Nope. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. They didn't have augmented assignment operators, which is like plus equals, star equals. Yeah.
Sometimes like the Eagles, you know, you can never go back. You should never look back.
Yeah. Better garbage collection and then minor changes. Oh no, they didn't have args and quargs in Python 1. Man.
Wow. So I'm starting to think everything we love about Python.
It was Python 2. That's kind of what I was afraid of. It's hard to imagine people really enjoying writing that language without comprehensions and without argument expansion.
Now, here's something I've never understood. I see here at the end of this, on this Gantt chart, there's Java 2, which is version 1.3. That confuses me today. Anytime I've ever tried to, like, sit down and do any kind of halfway serious project in Java.
It's 1.3 is the actual version number, but Java 2 is a brand name that they put on that version, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think it is, and I think that's I think it's alien to me because I'm so used to open source programming.
Like yeah. Like Java 1.3 could have just as well been called like, you know, Java flying saucer, you know? But they called it two.
Like, what are we on now? Like 1.12 or something like that? I haven't written anything outside of 1.8, I don't think.
Has anyone ever heard of C++?
No.
That's the lineage between C++ that leads into JavaScript on this chart. C++ was a scripting language.
That's a CMM. Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
And that's the C++.
Yeah. I based on the description below it, I think it's
yeah, so that comes off C++. What was the -? I wonder. Was it
like a reduced? I mean, if it was a predecessor for JavaScript, I'm assuming it was a stripped down version of. I'm just looking at this and I'm getting mad. And people were just like, you know, because now we have JavaScript and we didn't have to. Someone was like, we'll take C++ and we'll do less with it. But that we already had that. That was C and it was good. And we could have just written, and now everyone's trying their ass off to write JavaScript that backward compiles to assembly. And we could just be writing C.
Now I'm feeling like the JavaScript conspiracy goes back even further, and the seed was already there. The seed of chaos and entropy was already there with the like, yeah, but you know, we could write C++, because I like some of the stuff in C++, but not all of it.
I've never loved C++, and now I have less reason to love it because I know what it begat. But you know, as we always end up admitting on this show. I've read a lot of JavaScript these days, and you know, I don't hate my life as much as I thought I would doing it. But I credit that to Vue. Vue is a scholar and a gentleman, and a pleasure to work with.
Anytime I look at a little bit of React, I feel gross, and I go back and look at some Vue code. So I'm like, oh.
Yeah, eye bleach, little eye bleach there. I'm like, oh,
yeah, God. A little eye bleach.
Get these, get these tags out of here.
Yeah, like especially the conditional rendering. Like that's really where my first, just like I feel like I hit a wall and I'm doing some React. Like obviously I can figure it out and get through it, but just like really, this is how I have to do this? Like with some kind of weird ternary operator? And you know, in Vue, you put it right there in your HTML element.
Yep.
This guy. If this thing is true, do this.
Yep. V on.
I don't have to think and use my imagination of do what.
Yep.
Do like, you know, I just see right there. That's what that'll do.
It's pretty good. Pretty good. All right. This is cool. Like I'm sharing this. I hope I remember to share this in the show notes for our loyal listeners to check this out. But this is really good.
Yeah. It's fun.
Lisp goes way back further in this than I thought it would. I knew that Lisp was. But this is like Lisp, like before Common Lisp. And so I knew that it would go way back, but I didn't realize it would go all the way back to 56, okay. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smalltalk comes off of Simula and Lisp. Never heard of Simula.
Smalltalk influenced Ruby. Cause I thought that like, I always kind of forget that Smalltalk, the first language to show off the power of object-oriented code. So that's, I always kind of think of Java as like, as that for some reason, but really Smalltalk was the first language to be object-oriented.
I think, Objective-C came out of Smalltalk.
That would make sense.
Mm-hmm. And Ruby as well, right? If you go far enough on this thing. Yeah, Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby, just Python.
Yeah, it shows Ruby drawing off of Python.
Yeah,
it's weird. It's hard to interpret the direction, but I guess the x axis here is time, so it can't go backward. Yeah, can't go backward.
Pulls off of Python.
Yeah. That would kind of make sense because Python was already around. So I mean, you know, it would be tough to write a language that's so similar. Because that's always the thing. Like I can look at Ruby code. Until I get to something.
I forgot to look up. This is what I really wanted to find out from this was whether or not Ruby was influenced by Pascal. And I haven't found Pascal in here yet. Have I seen Pascal?
Pascal.
Where are you at, Pascal?
They were like, Pascal was a learning language.
Well, they have those up at the front. They have like,
I mean, Basic is on here, but even though Basic went on to be Visual Basic,
I think it's weird that they kept Basic like that. But I guess that's true. It's not really about what it inspired. I mean, it's just there were no languages actually derived from Basic, apparently. Plenty of languages inspired by, but that doesn't mean derived from.
Right.
Camel.
Right.
Camel 2.6. Objective Camel.
O Camel. Shell.
I like that Shell's its own freaking language.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a minute to go like, wait, that shell? Like dot
yep.
shell?
Yep. And then they have Bash comes off of it at one part.
Yep. Corn shell, which I've always heard about but never used.
Oh, there it is. Object Pascal. It's right in the middle and it comes. Oh, wait, Pascal. No, okay, I found Pascal. Finally.
What year? Which column?
It's towards the bottom, 1970. It comes off of Algol 68. Yep. And then it inspires Modula. Mm-hmm. Modula goes into Python, actually. So Python lineage
goes into Ruby.
And yeah, so Python lineage goes back into Pascal.
A modular language. I wonder if that's kind of, that's where Python gets a lot of its modular
Modula. I have to stuff, look it up. What's the difference between the red ones and the green ones? Oh. Endangered protect. Oh, this is. I didn't realize that there were the color scheme here. Part. Yeah, this is like it's like the it's the Wikipedia like level of extinction endangerment.
Protected, taught at universities. Compilers are available. Endangered usage dropping off. Instinct. No known active users or up to date compilers.
You guys, Pascal is endangered, and we need to build a little zoo.
I like it
and nurse it back to health and you know try and convince it to mate like a panda bear and I'm looking at these ones. I want to play with an extinct language now that I have the list. I have the definitive list. I'm gonna go write some B. Can I get a B interpreter or a B compiler?
Wait, no, that's Snowball. part of why
String processing language or text and formula manipulation common in text processors.
There is a B compiler someone has recently in the last 6 years reconstructed one.
It's like, I will.
Yep. A compiler for B.
Well, B. Well, what did. So, oh, yeah, yeah. B, obviously. B led to C and B. Came from BCPL. Oh, no. That rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Basic combined programming language.
But now we'd have to give that like a pronounceable acronym. So that's BACPOL.
I like it.
We're looking for rock star BACPOL developers.
Yep.
You need to have, what year did it come out? 1967? You need 150 years of experience with BACPOL. it's a senior like role.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, yeah. I didn't even think about that. For
12 years of Kubernetes?
12 years of Kubernetes experience. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I saw that.
So I just want to point out Fortran, 1954, still in the green here in 2001.
Dude, Fortran was like 6 months ago a dependency for scikit-learn, or at least before Python 3 it was. We had to install on the project. Sorry, we can probably name clients on this show. I don't think they care, but you know those guys with the brain.
Good guys.
Yeah, Fortran was a dependency for the machine learning solver. Yep. 100%.
Because I remember when we encountered that.
I saw it and I was like, we've been hacked. I would pip install and I saw it installing Fortran and I'm like, nope, there's like someone got a payload into our requirements.txt. I don't know what this thing is installing, Fortran, but it's not our app. It's got Fortran in it.
I can't remember just auditing dependency. And that's the day we learned.
I think it was actually in the Python 2-3 upgrade because we were auditing dependencies one by one for that reason. And it was you and I that were working on it. I remember that now.
Yep.
It was a long time ago.
That my mind was blown because I knew my father-in-law did Fortran programming and like I've known a couple of old school Fortran programmers, and so like I have nothing but respect. Just want to hear war stories about like, so you took your cards down the hall to the thing and put them in the thing, you know, like.
What's the current version of Fortran?
So I think that changed with like Fortran 4, I think is what.
Well, there was 4, and then there was a 66, 77, Fortran 90, 95, and now they number it. Either that or, yeah, it's been long enough. Maybe they do have 2018 versions of Fortran out there. God knows Angular. Angular is getting close to 2000. I think they're on Angular 2000.
Been around since 1954.
Alan, were you there the other day when we asked Blake what version of Angular was out? And what did he say?
No, I would love that.
Hang on.
Nine.
9 or 10 is like, I was going to suggest 10.
9?
Yeah. I thought people were still writing in Angular 4.
Yeah. That's, wow. Like, why? I mean, dude, we're still waiting for like Vue 3 to go, you know, to like,
see, this
to
is,
be a grown up.
This is what bugs me about JavaScript. On your docs, how do I not know the current version? Because there's no version listed anywhere in the documentation. It's like, what if I need to look up the docs for a previous version? There's not even a version selector. And they would say, like,
why are you using
upgrade your project? Are you a dinosaur? Like, why are you trying to use a different version than the one that came out today?
Drove me nuts. Like I'm trying to give it a chance and look at it because like React's coming out, so it's kind of getting to where you got to make a decision on a front end framework. And I remember doing the tutorial, but I'm like TypeScript. God, I just barely got a grasp on JavaScript. I don't need another script in here. And then their like documentation ended. Like it was like in JavaScript documentation to come. Yeah. Here's the tutorial in TypeScript.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, the JavaScript tutorial never came.
Never came. Never existed. Time. Yeah.
Took off with TypeScript and they never looked back. That was you it. Know?
I found it's 10.0.3 is the stable version. I did find but also bad look for Angular. The drop down selector was broken on the site until I reloaded it a couple times. So I must have loaded the Angular 9 version of the site that was cached in the CDN. And that. Angular 9 atrophied so quick it doesn't even work in Chrome. yep.
Only Chromium. Only latest Chromium.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I dig this thing.
Yeah.
Are you cool with Chromium, Tyrell? Chromium's okay? Or are you anti-Chromium too?
Yeah.
It's got less.
I just noticed your shirt. The Datalorian, sir, that's amazing.
That is cool.
That's the T-shirt algorithm finally caught Sarah in the feels around Father's Day.
Got it.
And so this is my Father's Day gift. It just got in the mail here today.
That's awesome. Like a dad, just way cooler.
Datalorian definitely sounds like something Henry would say. I still make him call bulldozers bulls of dadass because that's what he called him when he was little. I call bulldozers bulls of dad has now. We saw one the other day on a wire. I was like, look, it's a bulls of data.
That's awesome. Yeah. My computer's about to drop.
It's the end of a week and a long one too. You guys have a good weekend. We'll say bye to our listener fans. Thanks for hanging with us. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow @FridayDeploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, You can email us at podcast@higherlofty.com.